This is an advert from Jackson's Art Supplies, who provide a huge range of fine art materials for artists all over the world. Now, did you know Jackson's offer their own brand of art materials? By working directly with the best craftspeople and manufacturers, Jackson's have developed their own extensive range of high-quality, affordable paints and colours that rival today's leading brands. These include luminous artist watercolours, the very highest quality professional oils, richly pigmented handmade pastels, and vibrant alcohol inks. Jackson's colour ranges offer everything you need from a professionally made colour with true value in mind. So the next time you need to order that specific paint colour and need it delivered anywhere worldwide, then simply order online at jacksonsart.com.
Hi, I'm Tom Shepherd.
And I'm Peter Keegan.
And welcome to Ask an Artist. This is the podcast designed for working artists and makers who are looking for tips and advice, ideas and strategies for not only making, but also selling and promoting their work too.
Well, the podcast is called Ask an Artist for a reason, because every now and then we reach out to you, the listeners, for some of your excellent arty questions. Not those arty-farty ones about which varnish we should use or what are those little wooden bits they provide in a shop-bought canvas. I get asked that all the time. But it's about the behind-the-scenes questions and the working side of being a working artist. So if you have a question you'd like to put to me and Tom, and I promise you there's no such thing as a stupid question, in fact, we particularly love the stupid questions because we're all thinking them, then all you have to do is send us your questions via the podcast website, which is askanartistpodcast.com. You can simply Google Ask an Artist and we should pop up. Or you can reach out to us via Instagram and we'll try and answer as many of those questions as we possibly can. And to kick us off, we have a question here via Instagram from Ashley Allen. And Ashley has asked, do you ever really know when it's the right time to become a full-time artist? Secondary to that, what are your experiences of trying to build momentum as an artist when it isn't your primary job? So we're sort of talking, I suppose, the difference between a part-time artist, maybe they're working in employment and then trying to work the way as an artist, and then taking that step of actually putting the whole load purely on that creative pursuit. It's a difficult situation, a difficult question, isn't it, Tom?
We can break it into the two parts, I think, as well. And I think first one is, do you know when there's a right time? And the circumstances are going to be so different for everyone. Obviously, money, security is going to be a big decision for a lot of people. You know, when I made the leap to become an artist, I only had myself to look after. So it was an easy decision. My lifestyle was incredibly cheap. And I started doing it from a very young age. Not everyone has that kind of luxury. It's funny, actually, because I actually know Ashley and follow him on Instagram. And I've thought he was already like a full-time working artist, which is a testament to how he presents himself. So he's already on the right track. But you really just have to sit down and ask what your greater vision is for, like, when is the right time? Mm. Like, have you got other mouths to feed? What are your outgoing costs? You have to be quite pragmatic about it. And, you know, a lot of people might say, oh, you need 6 months of savings in the bank or a year saving in the bank. It's not necessarily true, but it's still in the direction of, like, you've got to be realistic about where your money's going to come from when you make the leap of faith, I think. And as we've already discovered, like, having a plan is so important, and having a direction you want to go in, and you've got to be flexible, and that plan's going to evolve, and there's going to be certain things that you won't know what to do or how to do until you start. So it's going to be that balance of having a plan, having some direction, pragmatic about money, but also at some point accepting you can come up with all the excuses in the world, but at some point you've just got to make the leap and have a bit of faith and just go for it and commit to it wholeheartedly. You might slowly tailor off your work, or you might just make the jump. It's going to be so different for everyone. It's a hard one to pinpoint, isn't it, Peter? You know, what are your thoughts on the right time, as it were?
Whenever I have this question given to me, I always reflect back how I dealt with it. And when I went from emerging artist, part-time artist, full-time artist, and at what stages those were. And it was a gradual process. It wasn't instant. I wasn't sort of going all in and all out. It was bit by bit by bit. So I had a part-time job for a while where I was working 4 days a week, and the other day that I had available, I was using that for art. And then a little bit further down the line, I was then working 3 days a week, and then I had 2 days for the art and so on. So I was scratching out just a little bit, bit by testing the waters and to see if it was sustainable. However, there did come a time when I thought, well, to the point where I was turning work down. I was having to say, well, I can't do this artistic project, this artistic job or opportunity because of something else was going on. And that's when I had to ask myself, well, I'm never going to grow if I don't give myself the chance and the opportunity to do that. And I thought, if I give up my, say, 2 day a week normal job and actually go full 5 day a week art, on those two extra days, you know, I am going to be working just as hard. I am going to be working hard on every element of the business of an art. And you're quite right. It's in the planning. Plan what you're going to do. How are you going to achieve your goals? Whether it is monetary, whether it is creatively, whether it is logistically, everyone has very different goals on what they're looking to achieve. No one's ever going to give you that green light, but it'll come a point where for me, it felt like I had so many opportunities and things coming my way and I was having to put them down and refuse them. And I just, this is madness. Of course, I'm never going to grow if I don't seize and take these opportunities. But I did so carefully, very slowly, bit by bit.
That's such good advice for you. And I think that the longer life goes on and maybe the more responsibilities we have and the more, you know, being pragmatic again, costs that we have in our life, the more it makes sense to tailor. Like I was in a fairly nice position where I was able to make that leap of faith, as I said, because I didn't have huge outgoings. Gently tailoring makes probably a lot more sense to many people. But it sounds interesting from what you've said. There's going to be a point where it almost said as you sounded as if you were saying that, it's almost like the water building up in a dam. It's like, oh, there's this pressure building of like, oh, I could make the leap to become an artist. There's the pressure enough there. And then at some point you just let the dam go and you make the leap, and you're not only the person involved can make that decision, but a little bit of soul searching, you might find, oh, maybe I'm jumping the gun just a bit too soon. I've got to get a few more ducks in a row, but also at the same time, not being too fear orientated where all of your ducks have been in a row for 2 years, but you're still not making the leap. And only the individual can really call that ultimately.
Yeah. I mean, we're lucky. We know lots of artists. We've interviewed many on here and we know lots of artists privately. And I always sort of try and find out what that kind of journey is. And I think it's really important to say that lots of artists that we see as professional full-time artists actually are not technically full-time artists. They still have a part-time job and they're happy with that. That is perfectly fine. And as a fellow creative and as a fellow artist, I don't see them as a less of an artist because they happen to have second income. It doesn't take anything away from the strength of their creativity, the wonder of their work, and the success they are achieving incredibly well. So I think it's sometimes important to sort of look in and say, actually, if everything is working quite right, if you feel you have enough time and you're fulfilled creatively with your practice and you have the security from a different piece of employment, that is fine. Many artists across the globe work on that very, very well and indeed very successfully. And on looking to change that arrangement.
Oh, that's such an important point, Pete, because there's been some artists I've met where I'm, and this sounds negative, but it's not, where I'm surprised that they aren't completely full-time, partly because of the quality of their work, but also because of how they present themselves. And exactly as you said, absolutely in no way whatsoever a lesser artist because they have another job. There's been times, you know, earlier on when I was working, and I actually devoted more time to painting when I was working because I didn't have the pressure of having to do all the other admin around running a business. So the kind of takeaway point, I guess, from that is really being quite honest with yourself about, well, what is your reason for wanting to go full time?
Yeah.
Like, is it so that you can actually just focus 100% on running a business as an artist, being realistic that you will have to do a lot of other work that isn't painting? Or actually, if you are really honest with yourself, is it actually okay at the moment? And that there's just a little bit of a romantic idea of wanting to be a full-time artist, but in reality, actually, there's not really any need for that. You know, it's also circumstantial. And I can definitely, you know, having lots of friends in a similar position, if you are, though, wanting to really gain momentum, like you just said, there can be a point when you're coming up against the brick wall where you want to build momentum as an artist, but your existing daytime job is getting in the way, then the decision, I feel, while still scary, becomes a little bit easier to make because it's very clear cut that one thing, your job, is holding you back.
Yeah, And for me, momentum, I think for me, comes from two things, which I think is very, we all do. I think we just need to be aware of it. And that is being consistent in what you're doing, consistently doing it. Now, that doesn't mean you have to produce the same thing in the same style on the same day, but the fact that you're consistently doing it, whatever it may be, whether you're turning up consistently, you're entering, you're in shows consistently, you're consistently producing work, that in itself produces momentum, and commitment to that thing that you are doing. If you're committed to doing it, you will turn up. Be consistent in producing it. For me, those two words, commitment and consistency, give you momentum. They kind of keep driving you forward and keep pushing you forward at different speeds, different paces, different terrains, uphill and downhill. We will all face those at different points of our career. But consistently working hard in that committed way, I think for me, gives me the momentum that I need as an artist.
Yeah, definitely. And I think just to round it off, I think when you put it so concisely like you did, Pete, you'll be very aware when that momentum is getting blocked, or you're not being able to be consistent because of another factor, which may be your primary job. And then, you know, like we were just saying, the decision becomes maybe a little bit more obvious then. Nonetheless scary. So we have another question from Kay via Instagram. This is a really interesting question. My mother was a prolific artist in oils, acrylic, pastel, pen and ink, pencil and more. After she passed away, we discovered over 200 plus works of art. Any ideas of how to handle posthumous art? She did not leave any instructions on how she wished her work to be handled after her death, and it feels disrespectful to destroy these beautiful pieces. I am also an artist, so between my work and hers, storage is getting to be an issue.
Ah, yes. That word storage, isn't it? Where do you keep all this stuff?
Oh my gosh. We can all relate to that. Yeah. And I think, you know, whether you're someone who's passed away, if you lost someone as an artist or not, I think we can all relate to how we feel about getting rid of something that is theirs. And potentially, when it comes to art and something that they've spent their lifetime creating and there's so much emotional attachment, maybe that's somewhat heightened as well. You know, feeling, like she said, feeling disrespectful to destroy certain pieces. If you don't mind me diving in, Pete, the first thing that came to mind for me, and it may not be viable in this case, but it's what I would do given my circumstances if I was in this position, I would take all of the work and I would, if I had the space to do it, hang it in my home, and I would have an exhibition where I invited all of that person's friends, all of my close family, anyone I knew, to like celebrate the life of the person, celebrate her artwork. And then if people wanted to take away a piece of that artwork, they can do so. And I think you're very much respecting your mother in this case. You've obviously creamed a few of your favourites off the top, of course, before you put it out to everyone else. And then you'll inevitably be left with some. And then your decision is, you know, I've been respectful of the pieces that I've given away and that I've kept. Is there some sort of ceremony that I can do to get rid of the remaining ones? And some people might feel what I'm about to say is disrespectful, but in my case, you know, having a bonfire of the remaining pieces to me feels like making a ceremony of the last few pieces that haven't found a home. And you can make it whatever you want. It can be like a little event, again, celebrating the person's life. That's just an example of how I would approach this sort of situation. So I'm super curious to get your angle on it, Pete.
I think that as image makers, what we on the whole wish to achieve is to show our images to others. You know, these are visual images, whether they're three-dimensional objects, two-dimensional objects, they're designed to be seen and they're designed to connect and resonate in hopefully some way with the person viewing them. And I think wouldn't it be wonderful to allow as many people access to look at these pieces as possible? So in a circumstance like this, of course, the first thing I would do is, how many of these works of art can I share with close friends, relatives and families? You know, if I was in the circumstance of a close loved one that passed away that produced some work, I would love the opportunity to own pieces of their work. Because of course, not only do I have a love of art, but of course the love of that person that's no longer around. So the significance of that painting, therefore, is that much more important. As and when the time happens for me, I would love it that my work is living on the walls Of those people that chose to have it on their walls. So I would try and find ways of passing it on. I love your idea of putting on like a lovely impromptu, a kind of family exhibition in some way to celebrate that. I think that's lovely. I think you could potentially, if you're looking from perhaps a philanthropic perspective, if you are able to find or identify maybe an organization or a charity that the artist was linked to or linked with in some way, is the way that you could use the paintings to fundraise and make money, whether it be an auction or selling to raise money for a particular organization or a charity. I think doing that in the name of someone who's no longer around would be a very nice idea in some capacity.
Yeah, I love that idea as well, Pete. And I, from personal experience, having sort of been left with a large amount of my own paintings that maybe weren't finding homes, but I wanted to move on, I was lucky enough to have someone approach me to ask if they could take them to put on the walls of like a very specific care home. And that was just with a view that it would uplift the atmosphere of the area. And they also had an art room and some of the pieces would go in there. So yeah, there's so much scope for what you could do with this work that doesn't involve A, storing it away so no one sees it, or potentially you don't have to throw it on a bonfire.
Absolutely. The one final thing I'd say, I mean, this depends on the artist and the provenance of the artist and so on. But if an artist is particularly well known or has a certain reputation, then I would certainly approach local regional galleries or museums and see if there is an opportunity where they would welcome a significant piece that either represents that artist, or indeed if they have portrayed a particular thing, whether it be a particular landscape or a particular area, that would the area that's associated to that particular painting, would they like a record of that for their records? And this may not be a work of art that would be put on display, but it would be kept in their archives from a piece of social history context of art that being produced by artists significantly working today as well. I know a few artists' family have done that where in the region I am, and some institutions have welcomed an additional piece into their collection.
Really interesting. Yeah, such an interesting question. I would love to hear, Kay, what you do decide to do as well. That would be fascinating.
Well, I think that's a good time. We're going to take a quick break. This week, I'd like to talk about a Rosemary & Co. paintbrush that is perfect for the acrylic painters amongst you. Now, as an occasional dabbler in acrylics myself, I need a brush that's firm enough to hold a good quantity of paint on it and yet has the smoothness that allows the paint to glide across the surface and doesn't lift or scratch the paint I've just applied. Now, for this purpose, I love to use Rosemary's Shiraz synthetic brushes. Using a blend of firmer nylon hairs, it's a brush that has the strength of bristle, yet it's able to offer a delicate feel through each brushstroke. As a result, these Shiraz brushes, named because of their deep red-coloured hairs, offer a brilliant snap and spring, a good holding pool for wetter washes, and a controlled flow through the tip. Now, the firmer nylon used in these brushes also ensure that they retain their shape for longer. Definitely a brush all acrylic painters should have in their brush collection. Now, if you'd like to find out more information about these Shiraz brushes or would like to order your own free mail order catalogue shipped anywhere around the world, then simply visit rosemaryandco.com, and the next time you order, make sure you let them know that you were sent there by Ask an Artist podcast. Welcome back to Ask an Artist with me, Peter Keegan.
And me, Tom Shepherd, and we are taking some of your questions. So next we have from Multi B Lee via Instagram. Do artists need to be in galleries to be successful, inverted commas? I've been deprioritizing applying for shows at galleries and I'm opting to exhibit in alternative locations and at festivals instead, where I keep more of my revenue of sales. This works for me right now as I can earn more from the limited inventory I have. However, I keep getting raised eyebrows at this approach from other artists I know. What are your thoughts on it? And I'm going to throw that initially to you, Pete. There's some very specific wording in there, which I like, which I think we can pull out and analyse.
Who are these artists raising their eyebrows? I don't like these artists. We shouldn't be raising our eyebrows.
It's not me.
It's not you, is it? No. So what's that first question? Do artists need to be in galleries to be successful? Well, I mean, that very much depends on what your definition of successful is. I know plenty of artists who themselves, they deem themselves successful, and I would as well. And some of them are in galleries, and some of them haven't got any painting or work of art in a gallery whatsoever. So it very much depends on your definition of what success is. Now, if you're looking to climb the mountain of being a great artist and you want to be remembered for the great history of time, if you're looking to win the Turner Prize, of course, you need to get your work into galleries. That's the very nature of kind of high fine art in the UK and around the world. But if your definition of success is you just want to make a good living with your work, or people are purchasing your paintings and they're on the wall and you're giving great pleasure and love, then of course that's fine without that need and anchor of a gallery. I think there is a little bit of a hang-up. Yeah, I think there's a bit of a kind of a traditional leaning of, in order to be a successful artist, you need a gallery. And I think that model is somewhat outdated. And I think in this day and age, you don't need that physical in-person presence to represent you. Having said that, it doesn't harm whatsoever having that physical gallery retail space that sells your work. Of course, it's going to give you kudos. Of course, it's going to give you that little bit of credibility of an artist. It's not necessarily going to be a bad thing. But is it wholly dependent on the determination of a successful artist? For me, I really don't think so, not in this day and age. What about you, Tom?
No, I totally agree. I think you pretty much nailed it there, Pete. I think it's, you know, what do you deem to be successful? If being in a gallery means you think you're successful, then you're successful. And if not, whatever. It's like, what are you setting out to achieve, and what can a gallery bring to you? Rather than thinking like in the past, as you said, I think, Peter, like almost like gallerists and galleries at any level were like the gatekeepers to the art world, and you had to go through them to get to the art world. That is no longer the case. So maybe ask yourself, why would you want to be in a gallery? What's it going to bring to your life and your business? And if you can come up with a good answer, then maybe pursue it. And Multi B Lee, is it? Yeah, says that she's deprioritizing applying for shows at galleries. So this implies another approach to galleries when you have these like group shows or award-based exhibitions and stuff like that. And, you know, we've spoken about this before, like those can be a real benefit to your career, but they're certainly not the only way to have a career as an artist. As you said, again, it might, you know, bring your profile up, if you want to call it that. But again, your profile up, but why? Because you want the esteemedness of being a high profile artist, or because you simply want to make more money to allow you to live a certain lifestyle. If that's the case, then can you live that lifestyle by selling your art at alternative locations and festivals? So it's all just kind of swings back round to what ultimately do you want to get out of it? And I just to pull on your final point, Peter, just that's also not to say that you shouldn't pursue galleries. Like, I have worked with galleries in the past in various forms. I find it quite stressful and I don't enjoy it. I've had some bad experiences, not for anyone's fault. However, I am working with one gallery at the moment and I really enjoy that relationship, and it's reciprocal and it works well for both of us. But again, it's not a gallery where I am gaining a huge profile because it's in the middle of London, or it's like an award-based or open exhibition in some of the big galleries. It's just a nice working business relationship that's getting my work in front of more people. That said, because I want to grow my business and I want to sell more paintings, I am planning in the future to prioritize applying for more shows at galleries and those sorts of open exhibitions. But again, I have a very specific aim in mind. It's if I don't get into those shows, I'm not going to feel any less successful. They're just part of my greater kind of business plan, if that makes sense.
It links into that plan, that kind of there's a specific aim, there's a specific reason why you wish to be attributed to anything, in this case, the gallery. I think, you know, one final kind of word on galleries that I see some of my artistic colleagues and friends, they really, really, really strive to be represented by a gallery, and they get that representation and then they get very disappointed that the paintings are not flying off the walls and they're not making hundreds and thousands of pounds. The sort of stark reality is sometimes paintings will just sit on a wall for several months and you may not make a sale. So you get this.
And they might get sent back to you.
Absolutely. So you might get the, you know, the ego of saying that you're represented in a gallery, which is good for maybe marketing and as perceived success. But whether that attributes to actual success of you maintaining the life of being an artist may actually turn out to be something very, very different. Like always, a good gallery, if you have a fantastic gallery, a wonderful relationship, and they work hard on the sales and marketing, it can completely transform an artist's career. Absolutely. So I agree with you. They're not to be turned down and turned away from.
Yeah.
But to be a successful artist in this day and age, you don't need a gallery.
No. And I would finally add that, if I've got other artists raising eyebrows at my actions, part of me is like, oh yeah, great, I'm doing the right sort of thing. So just going to leave that one there.
the little rebel in you.
Exactly.
There,
thanks so much for listening, everyone. And remember, if you'd like to put a question to me and Peter, then do so via our website, which is askanartistpodcast.com, easily findable through Google, where you can also find all the other regular episodes, our interview episodes, and of course, our question episodes, along with the show notes. We are absolutely delighted that Search Press is again sponsoring the podcast. They are the leading supplier of arts and crafts books here in the UK, and Search Press publish beautiful, very practical books that delight, inspire, and instruct artists and crafters of all skill levels the world over. You may remember the episode we recorded with Chief Editor Ed Ralph from Season 5. Extremely interesting, definitely check it out. To see all of the wonderful books that they have on offer, please visit searchpress.com.